Hey,
hi,
cats. Welcome to Movie Humpers. I am Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
The sounds of your maybe dogs. And this month is, this month is for me, right? Mm-hmm. It's for us, right?
For us.
We just like movies like this. Old head's going to pop up. Actually, older movies get a lot more traction on our channel than I ever expected.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm hoping for a lot of interaction for some old film noir buffs today. We're not experts, but we do love us some classic film noir.
Yeah.
And this show's all about us going through a movie education and then judging them. But this month's theme, I call it the left-hand endeavor. Isn't that a cool name for a film noir month? I thought so. And our image that I post for that shows a frame from Out of the Past, which we reviewed a long time ago. Go back and check that out. That and Night of the Hunter are two classic noirs that we have discussed before. We like those movies very much. Two of our favorites. So we're knocking down some good ones this month as well. And this one, many you've kind of heard float around in the zeitgeist, but this one, I have not heard much of before.
Me neither. I'm surprised.
Prior to doing some personal research to book the show, but this movie, They Live by Night from 1948, directed by Nicholas Ray. Nicholas Ray's most famous film, Rebel Without a Cause.
Ooh, that makes sense.
Another good movie. And this will not be the first only Nicholas Ray movie we discuss, as later in the month we'll be discussing In a Lonely Place, starring Humphrey Bogart. But yes, very, in terms of just compared to some of Nicholas Ray's other works, this movie's very underrated, right?
It's so good.
This movie's good.
It's really good.
It's written by Charles Schnee, Nicholas Ray, based on a book by Edward Anderson, and it stars our boy, he's gay, Farley Granger, who we saw in Rope. When we discussed the film Rope. Also starring Kathy O'Donnell, Howard Da Silva, and J.C. Flippin, amongst others. Now, with the movie Gilda, we called it a noir-mance.
Yeah.
It was pretty pure noir. And then at the tail end, it felt like almost the overall tone of the movie shifted completely to a pure romance. This is a romance that never not feels like it's noir.
Yeah.
And I think when we were discussing Mississippi Masala a couple months ago at this point, that we were talking about the convincing romances and what we like out of romantic movies. Maybe we're not as drawn to a lot of the more, at least from the 90s, 2000s era.
Yeah, the more conventional.
Conventional romances. I mean, we may get to them when we can, but we also just talked about how we do seem to like romances from more classic movies. But admittedly, those can feel just as contrived.
Yes.
Or at least those movies kind of assert this weird expectation of romance. Like, oh, there's a girl there, so she's got to chase the guy.
Right.
Like It Happened on Fifth Avenue.
I was actually thinking that when you said it. Yeah.
And that movie is kind of funny enough that we just kind of, and I think often we just go back on to those classic films and like, yeah, that's just kind of how they always fucking did it.
Yeah.
But admittedly, a lot of romances in classic movies can feel a little contrived.
But there's just an extra charm to them that somehow makes it okay.
This may be one of the more convincing stories of young love.
Yeah.
In a film from this era that you can find. It almost feels like the universe wants them to be together.
Yeah.
And it is kind of breathless how good they are together. Even, I can't remember, both of the murderous leads in Rope, one was gay and one was bisexual.
I couldn't remember which one.
Yeah,
Farley was.
I can't remember if Farley was, but yeah, Farley Granger is great in this, and Kathy O'Donnell.
They have such good chemistry.
Yeah, they really do.
And she manages to turn her arc in this is very interesting, because when you first meet her, she very much looks like a little like grease monkey.
Yeah, she's a total tomboy. She's a total hottie in these.
She really is.
Coveralls here, these mechanic suit.
I thought at the beginning she looked pretty plain.
Right, we talked about this.
Yeah, and I wasn't like getting this. I wasn't getting it from her, but you were like, "Oh yeah, it's there," and I was like, "I don't know." And then the first time that she smiled at him, I was like, I'm in love with her. Like, she's just...
Yeah, she's super...
But part of what makes her so great And why when she does finally smile at him, it's so rewarding is because she's very skeptical of literally everyone. Her dad is a drunk.
Is she? Is she? Oh, where's my daughter? Is she?
You like your old man?
You like yours?
Not much.
Her uncle is a
crook.
Crook.
Farley Granger's character, Bowie, last name Bowers, they call him Bowie. He got locked up when he was 16 for killing somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Who did he kill? Did he kill the guy that killed his father?
I thought maybe he did, but he never said.
I think that may have been an implication.
Never said, yeah.
But it happened so young that he got locked up so young, mm-hmm. and he got in with these two other guys, Chickamaw
and T-Dub.
And T-Dub. We didn't make that up. Mm-hmm. Chickamaw has like this milky eye. I feel like he should have been called Milky.
They call him One Eye.
But he has this like fogged over eye. Yeah.
And it makes him crazy when you call him One Eye.
That's played by Howard Da Silva, who does a good job being like this very naturally creepy.
And he's her uncle.
Yeah. And that's how they kind of end up in the world together.
They go to them for help to get like a car and clothes and stuff because they obviously can't. They're wanted men. They're yeah, three men who escaped from prison.
They've
together.
Been robbing banks or setting up to. And this girl.
You having trouble?
Could be.
Who are you? You live around here?
Could be.
You haven't had a couple of visitors lately, have you?
That wouldn't be a sore foot making you limp, would it?
Could be.
I got some other stuff to pick up. Get in or we'll both get pneumonia.
The spark is kind of subtle when you first meet them, but you kind of see it there. You can tell they like each other, but they're also very resistant because one is a crook and the other is like a good girl. But she's also different from other girls in that she kind of has to help out with things and do things that a lot of girls don't have to do.
Yeah. And, you know, when he starts to say things like, well, some girls like to travel or most girls like this or most girls. And she's like, I'm not most girls. She's never had a boyfriend. And he asks her why. And she's like, I never really saw the point.
Yeah. She can fix your car.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, Hays Code era movies, we're not seeing many girls like this.
Mm-mm.
But she's also got this like aunt.
So it's T-Dub. His brother is also in jail and can't get out. And so they call his brother's wife to help them because the goal is they want to rob this bank and T-Dub's going to use his money to get his brother out of jail. But with her like brokering the deal because obviously he's a wanted man. So the goal is that's the goal. So she shows up. Her name is like Maddie.
And she's hard hating on these kids for no real good reason.
Well, she sees herself in what's her name? How do you say it? It's like Keechee. Yeah.
Keechee.
She sees herself in Keechee and she sees
Kathy O'Donnell is Keechee.
Yeah.
Are you interested in that?
What's it to you?
It's jailbait.
It's just a kid.
Yeah. That's what I said once. Maybe you'll be lucky. Maybe they won't send him back to prison. Maybe he'll get himself killed first.
I'll take you to the bus.
She can recognize that there's something going on between these two kids, maybe even before they realize it. And she basically says to her, you don't want to get messed up in that.
Yeah.
That's not worth it. He's fucking jailbait. Because she went with a guy that she was in love with, but he was a thief, and now he's in prison.
At first, she's trying to encourage him because she knows he's kind of wrapped up in things that are bigger than him. She gets this vibe that he's not really this hardened man like her aunt. Like, she doesn't even like her own uncle, really.
Mm-mm. She doesn't like her dad. She doesn't like.
She doesn't really like anyone but Bowie. He's a victim of his own circumstances and a bad upbringing, too, as they imply there.
Yeah.
But she's a little naive in the sense that he's an escaped convict and she's like, no, they don't just jail people for no reason. I'm sure if you go and like talk to them, like she's trying to encourage him to Because she just doesn't want him to be on the run all the time.
Yeah, at one point she says, you know, it happens all the time. Like, we live normally for like 10 years, and then you go tell them who you are, and they just let you go. Because yeah, you've proved that you can live in society. And I was like, oh, that's the way that works. Yeah. He also has this plan that he's going to take the money he has and go to Tulsa and see this lawyer who he thinks can clear his name.
Because it happened to some other guy before who was convicted underage. Because
he was 16 years old. And he does not ever give us the exact details
of what put him in there, but
yeah,
I think he killed the guy who killed his dad. That's what I think. I mean, if he plotted that, then maybe he is pretty hardened.
I remember him telling something about how something happened, and then he said the other kids ran, and I should have too, or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened.
It's vague.
It's very vague.
So they're scouting this area, and they scout this bank, and this guy he met earlier kind of makes him, but he doesn't realize this guy's trying to get in his face.
He went to the jewelry store and bought her a watch, and the way he gets into the bank is he says, oh, like the guy has to break the bill.
Yeah.
And so he goes in the bank to scout the bank, and then, yeah, the next day he's like waiting for them to rob the bank, and the jeweler comes up and is like, hey, how's it going, man? My cold's getting better.
And he spazzes out and like shoves
him. He's like, get away!
Which obviously just raises more suspicion because that guy's going to hear but then
he immediately just drives across the street and picks up the guys who just robbed the bank.
Of course, right in front of the dude.
But he did get made.
They did rob the bank, and they haven't been arrested yet.
And they got their money,
so he goes back, and like you could tell, like the cosmos are trying to shove them together.
Well, and there's this scene that like felt,
pull your shirt up,
like it wouldn't have been okay because he's hurt his back,
right?
And basically, they drop him there with his money, like he's got his share of the money, and so she comes in and she like pulls his shirt up and is like rubbing this ointment on his back, and that's when he's like,
"Who's your fella, Keechee?
You got a man, Keechee?"
Why do you ask that?
You got a guy?
Did you chub out on this one?
It was very sweet. I wouldn't say I chubbed out, but it was very sweet.
I felt a little chubbing. Okay. Maybe a slight.
And that's when he started asking her questions, and then he told her to go look in his jacket pocket and that he bought her this watch.
I bought something for you then, Zelton. It's a little old watch. Do you want it?
Do you want to give it to me?
Yes.
Then yes. I want it.
It's just very sweet. And then basically she goes, were you asking me if I had a guy because you think you should be my guy? And he's like, yeah, I mean, I think maybe I was saying that. And they have this cute thing that they do. But as they were doing it, it's very cute. But I was like, you could never handle this because it would literally make you crazy. Because he'll go, do you want to be my girl? And she'll go, if you want me to. And then he'll go, yeah, I do. And she's like, okay. But it's like this, they always flip it around on each other. Like they won't just say, it's always like, well, do you want me?
Well,
okay.
They know.
It's flirty.
They know this is a bad idea. Like you can tell the
constant checking in.
The undercurrent of the whole situation, they both know that this is bad, but they are in love. Mm-hmm. Convincingly so. Yeah. They are just, they cannot help but be drawn together. So they decide it becomes a road noir, basically.
Yeah, well, and so, yeah, they find in the paper, like, that they know who they are. And for some reason in the paper, they think because he was driving that he's the leader of the gang.
They call him the Bowie Kid.
And no, the Zeppelin, whatever the Vank was called, the Zetlin Kid.
The Zephyr robbers, and they call him Bowie the Kid.
Bowie the Kid, yeah.
His legend, as he's on the run, is becoming so much bigger that they're even being blamed for murders and robberies that, like, they're not even
absolutely
doing.
And now they know, like, they leave together and they get on a bus, and then they end up getting off the bus to get married at this, like, quick, like, $20 marriage place, which is so funny because the man looks at Bowie and he says,
you don't think much of my way of marrying people, do you? I sure don't. Well, me neither. But I'm giving folks what they want. My way of thinking, folks ought to have what they want. As long as they can pay for it. You folks driving?
No.
Come in on the bus?
No.
You ain't aiming to get a hitch. That's no way to start a honeymoon.
But they're getting married there.
Yeah, that was a strange question. It's like, what do you care, right?
Yeah. Well, because that guy seems to kind of be just like the guy you go to for stuff, because he also hooks them up with a car.
The guy is so obviously like, yes.
I know. He's like, what do you need? I have a man. How much money are you going to give me? And, you know, he always needs his cut. But yeah, so they get married and they get in a car. And it's so sweet because he's been in prison since he was 16 and she's never had a boyfriend. And they don't actually say sex, but they're in the car at one point and she goes, you know, I don't really know much about kissing. And he goes, well, neither do I.
Yeah.
We'll learn together. So sweet to me, because it's like they're so in love and neither one of them have ever been with anybody else.
The shot, the concerns on her faces when he's dressed, and the shots of them together when they're alone. Like, there's one point where she's just kind of laying in one way, and he's kind of leaning over her and laying on the opposite direction. Like, it's just really crafty little movie here.
Yeah.
It really is very sharp.
It's very beautiful.
There's an image above your head is where, at one point when she's driving and he's asleep on her shoulder, and she just reaches her hand and just kind of pats his head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the affection feels very real in this movie.
It feels so real.
Maybe one of the best noir love stories we'll discuss.
Absolutely.
All month. Like, I just thought it was just so breathlessly sweet. Farley Granger, he does a great job.
Really does. They both do. They set up in this cabin, which is somewhere she'd stayed when she was little. And they basically say, we're going to be here for a couple of months. Right. And so they kind of get to know the man and his son. That was a really cute little bit part for that kid.
These interactions when they're on the run, there's like there's paranoia in the air, of course, because they're escaped criminals. So every time they're meeting anyone else, you're asking yourself,
are they going to turn him in?
Do they know? Or are they going to blackmail them?
Right.
There's one guy that recognizes him in a restaurant. And he just tells him to get out of town. He takes his gun, says, you need to get your shit out
of
town. That's
when they start traveling. Like, they've gone down south. Yeah, and after they get
And then he hands him his gun back. He's like, just leave. He doesn't even try to call the police.
Well, he's like another criminal.
Yeah.
And he's basically like, we got our shit on lockdown here. We don't need you fucking it up. So, like, get the fuck out of town. You have 1 hour. But when they're in the cabin, they're really like, they've set up house. They have a Christmas tree. Like, they're so happy. They're so in love. They're just like doing their thing. And then all of a sudden, Chickamauga shows up.
He figures out where they are based on the places that she used to go when they were children.
He's like, I figured she'd come back up this way.
And
they should have gone to Mexico.
I wonder how many more places he stopped at.
I don't know.
This was her favorite creek. She's not there. She loved the dairy dip here. She's not there.
He tells Bowie, he's basically like, you have to come with me. We have to do another job. We got you out to be our third. We need three. It's you.
You're an
you
investment.
Have to come. Yeah.
You're an investment.
Yeah. And she doesn't want him to go.
And he hasn't blown all his money, but they've already blown all their money.
We were so nervous he was going to lose his money the whole time.
Felt like it foreshadowed it, because he almost forgets it early
so
on.
So many times.
But he doesn't. No.
Every time he set it down, we were like, don't forget it.
We were watching that bag like a hawk. Like, this is it. This is when he's going to lose all his money. And it never happens.
No, it never happens. So he goes with them against her wishes and against his better judgment.
And it's interesting because the bank robberies, they happen off screen, right? And he tells her, he's like, I've got to go do this. They don't have any money. But I'm going to tell them that I'm done. I'm done.
This is the last one.
So after they after the job is done, he's explaining to him, is like, no, I'm out, and out is out.
Oh, and we find out too that I think the goal was they would get T-Dub's brother out and he might join them as the third, but that did not go. Like, they tried, but it was denied. Like, they couldn't get T-Dub out even with all the money that the brother gave Maddie. So his brother's still in jail. So that comes back around, because Maddie's still alone without her husband. And we don't see this robbery, but they do it. And then we see him and Chickamauga in the car together, and we find out that T-Dub got shot.
Yeah, like robbing a liquor store or something.
No. T-Dub got shot
at the bank.
At the bank in the robbery. And then Chickamauga, like, tries to swing on the kid, and he puts him out. He's like, get the fuck out of the car. and he puts Chickamauga out just on the street.
Right.
And that's when Chickamauga gets killed in the liquor store. But the boy doesn't, Bowie doesn't even know till he gets home to her because she tells him it's in the paper.
Chickamauga gets killed off camera after they
everybody gets killed off camera.
I'm fine with it, honestly. No, totally. We don't need to watch multiple bands. This isn't Michael Mann. We don't need to watch all these bands.
Yeah, yeah. There was a point, though, where he lost all of his faith that he was ever going to be able to leave, because when he hurt his back, because before that he'd been talking about the lawyer, when he hurt his back, it was because he and Chickamauga had went and bought new cars, and Chickamauga was driving behind him, honking at him to go faster, 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 and the kid got in a car accident. And then Chickamauga shot a cop, but they thought the kid did it. That's why also it was like Bowie the kid, he's the badass.
Well, yeah, they think he's the ringleader, and it actually makes Chickamauga jealous.
In a desperate attempt to reach the getaway car, the eldest of the trio, Henry T. Dub Mansfield, was shot and killed. It is believed that at least one other was wounded. The leader, Bowie the Kid Bowers, fast trigger killer, has so far...
Get in the back.
Bowie the Kid.
Then stay down on the floor. They're looking for two together, not one.
Don't you tell me what to do. You ask me if I want to do it. The leader.
Yeah, shit. He's so mad. He's like, they just talk about you all the time.
Every time someone dies, I don't think the kid's actually killing anyone.
No, he hasn't killed anybody.
He's just like the driver, right?
Yeah, he's not even robbing.
But they're just claiming that he's the one that's committing all the shootings.
Yeah, so he goes back to her, and basically it's like, we can just, let's just live now. Like, they're both dead. They're gone. We have our money still. Like, it's fine. And then the floor is flooded, and so a plumber is called. And what gets him is the box from her watch. From the whatever that city's
jeweler,
called.
From the jeweler.
From the jeweler that has the same name as the bank across the street. The plumber sees it and immediately is like, I gotta go. I gotta get my tools. He's got a whole bag of tools. And so she goes in the bathroom and realizes that he saw it. And so they like pack up and leave. And that's when they go down south and they get kicked out of that town.
Yeah.
And then he ends up at a motel. Maddie's motel.
Maddie's motel.
And he's like, you gotta help me. We're both bad.
T-Dub's sister-in-law, who's got the husband in jail. She does reluctantly agree to let them stay there. And Bowie kind of threatens her a little bit, or at least makes her feel bad, like, you're no different than me.
You're a thief, just like me. And you ain't going to go yell on us. Cheech's going to stay here. And if you or anybody else don't like it, it's just too bad.
You're a thief just like me.
And I'll give you money. Like, just let us stay here. She's sick. His wife was sick.
Yeah.
She's pregnant.
Right. We discovered she'd been pregnant for a bit.
Yeah.
But now she's just ill. But then we see that this lady is informing on the police in order to try to get her husband out.
And so she basically is like, if I can give you proof that catches him, you have to release my husband immediately. And they agree. And then she's like, they're in roommate. And he's gone away to try to go back to that man that married them to see if he can help them get to Mexico, because he offered at the beginning.
Right.
And they should have taken him up on it, because then they would have been fine. But they didn't.
And the guy's like, no, I can't do it.
Now it's too hot. Like, I can't help you. But his reason was weird. He was like, I can't help you because there's no hope.
Yeah.
Just take the kid's money and give him the tickets to Mexico.
I don't. Yeah, perhaps. Maybe the police had already come and found them or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
But so he goes back and he goes to talk to Maddie first before going into the room, because now his plan is to just leave a note for the sake of his girl. It's safer for her if, like, maybe he takes off, and he hopes that maybe if things straighten out down the road, he can come and see her and see the kid.
Gives Maddie a bunch of money to take care of her.
And he apologizes to Maddie. Of course, we know that Maddie has been snitching on him, and Maddie looks just visibly like
hurt.
She's not proud of herself.
No, and it's good. Knowing what we know, her face is like perfect.
And he writes a little note for her, and Maddie reads it over his shoulders like she's really going to like that. But Maddie, at first he's just going to be like, Maddie, just tell her.
Ain't you going to see her just once more?
No, I'd have to tell her. Safer this way.
She's asleep. You ought to see her again. You won't wake her. Don't you think she'd be glad to know you came back and saw her just one last time?
I don't know it.
It's only a thing women would know about.
I mean, we know what's up. And then she finally convinces him after he writes this sweet little note. And we see police, like, hiding all out. And as he's approaching the cabin where she is,
they just start shooting.
They call his name out and then blast him. And then she runs out and he dies in her arms. It ain't like the ending of Gilda. This noir man stays noir to the very end. The universe wanted them together, but the world tore them apart.
Wow.
I can write blurbs on the back of these DVDs.
Wow. That should have been on the poster.
Should have.
Ooh, that's slick. I like it.
But yes, this movie, it's just, I had so much fun just watching Farley Granger and Kathy O'Donnell together. Like, all of their, like, it really is just a near pitch perfect noir love story to me. Yep. And I couldn't get enough of them together.
Yep.
And Farley, he's like a criminal, but he's so aw shucks at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy O'Donnell, she's super, she kind of looks like Mia Goth a little bit. But anyway, we're going to review this movie. You're going to give it 1 through 5. I'm going to give it 1 through 5. Combined for best out of 10, They Live by Night from 1948, directed by Nicholas Ray. I will go first.
Mm-hmm.
4.5.
Same.
That's a 9.
Mm-hmm.
A plus. Almost S tier. It's hard to get an S tier.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. But this movie is definitely, it shares the rankings with Philip Kaufman's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, My Own Private Idaho, Poor Things, Tar, Sword of Doom. Yes, They Live by Night is at least as good as those movies. And I agree.
Watch this movie. If you just watch it, it's so good.
An underspoken noir gem and a genuinely heartfelt and convincing romance. But it is a noir, so just keep that in mind with the ending.
Absolutely. This is the kind of movie that I love making this show with you. But when we find a movie like this, it's like the reward for doing what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Like every so often we watch something that we don't know what we're getting into. This could have been terrible, but it ends up being one of the best movies that we've seen. I mean, an A+ is fucking, it might as well, you know, like we've talked about this before. Like if it's a 9,
yeah,
watch it.
I mean, if you just add a 0.25, it's S tier.
Exactly.
So yeah, just go ahead. It doesn't matter where we put it.
Mm-mm.
But we are right when we say this movie is really, really fucking good. That's all that matters.
We are always right.
Our rankings are just to establish that we talked about, the evidence that we discussed the movie.
Yeah.
But,
and it's fun to look back at.
And yeah, if you think this is an S tier, I ain't arguing with you. In my heart, it might as well be, right?
Right, yeah.
But yeah, They Live by Night, such a good one. I mean, I love movies like this, so.
And it makes so much sense that it's by the same guy that did Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah, totally.
I love that.
So check the show notes for links to other places to find us. Like, subscribe, leave a comment, a correction. We'll get to another Nicholas Ray movie before the end of the month.
I'm excited.
You got any fun facts? I love those as well. We appreciate you. Jimmy Cagney. I don't know if Jimmy Cagney is in any of our noir movies this month. I think most of our noir movies are 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll have a German noir that's in the 30s. But we do have a specific sign off for, the Left Hand Endeavor. You remember what it is? Yeah. See?
Oh, right.
Do it, Angela. By mid month, you'll be completely used to this.
Yeah. See?